Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is episode number 362 and broadcasting to you out of a great night in Lexington, Kentucky. This is Stephen Zimmer, and joining me tonight in the co-hosting booth, as it were, from not too far away, is the wonderful, the vivacious, the lovely Holly Phillippe. Holly, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm alive.
Yes, you are, and doing well, because I tell you, we've kept the busy in business in the last week. Is more good updates to share with you, and tonight, and as far as convention news, of course, has got a great show for you tonight with not one but two featured guests involving a great cause too. So it's going to be a really, really good show for tonight. So you can look forward to that, and the chat room is open. We've got some people starting to come in. I see Metalbeck Harrison, award-winning filmmaker and author Amy McCorkle, and others are coming in the chat room. So Holly will probably be in there just momentarily if you'd like to chat with her a bit tonight. So always take questions and comments from there. So that's a good place to be if you want to get some stuff talked about on the air. So, and I've got a Vicky with me too. I don't know how much Vicky is going to say tonight, but she's visiting at the moment.
I do have an Albert, but I don't know where he went.
You've got an Albert, and I've somewhere. Got a Vicky. she's right here. But it's been a good week though for convention activity. And so, as we always do at the beginning of the shows, since the podcast is affiliated with the Imaginarium Convention, we'd love to support lots of conventions, of course, but we want to keep you up to date on Imaginarium news. So in the last week, we had new programming and new guests to talk about. So since last time, we have had four new workshops added to the site. So they're all good ones. I mean, three of them are in the area of the book world, and one is in the area of the independent film world. So I will read you the topics and presenters, and then Holly can give some commentary on them if she'd like. The Business of Writing, and that's presented by Elizabeth Donald, a fantastic author and journalist who really knows her stuff, and also is the proprietor of The Literary Underworld, who put on not just one, but two room parties that everybody loves during Imaginarium. So Elizabeth is well loved at Imaginarium, and of course we think the world of her, but she gives a great workshop, and that's The Business of Writing. And then Effective Research by John Bukowski, and John is a new guest, so this is cool. But this is a workshop John's kind of got organized down to just a fine number of key points about doing research for writing, and that's what that one's going to be about. And then we have Writing and Marketing Queer Romance, and that's by C.W. Gray, and I'm looking forward to meeting C.W. She is a new person at the convention as well. So, we have lots of folks that and lots that you haven't met yet this year. And then, of course, an Imaginarium favorite, Herschel Zond, who is just a phenomenal filmmaker and also a great musician performer, is going to give a workshop entitled Let's Talk Film Production. And, yes, this is an overview from start to finish about igniting and or instigating an indie film production and seeing it through to the end, and he knows how to do this very well. So this is going to be a good overview of film production type workshop, And Herschel is just a wonderful. And yeah, no, Holly probably have a few words about Herschel. She loves him as well.
Oh man, he helped me get through the pandemic. I tell you, every night, well, every afternoon, Stephen used to go on Facebook Live, you know, and then who else went on?
Jason,
Sean went on.
Jason William Allen.
Jason William Allen. He went on, and then Herschel would go on about the time I was making dinner and sing his Sinatra tunes. And, yeah, he's just phenomenal. I mean, his Sinatra is just on point. I never knew the man could sing like that until 2020. So, yeah, that was quite a shock. I'm like, Herschel, why have you been hiding this from us? So last year he actually sung a few songs at Imaginarium. This year I will try to pull his arm and get him to do it again. I probably won't have to pull too hard. I think he enjoys it, and I do too. So, yeah, I'm going to sing us a few on Friday night.
And it kind of got him kick-started again doing that stuff because he's been doing shows out of town in some pretty good markets and actually did a couple sold-out shows and all kinds of stuff. So he's been doing that live. And but he is just a phenomenal photographer, cinematographer, filmmaker. And, I mean, he just knows every aspect of film production, just really really multi-talented creative. And if you're into indie film, you don't want to miss this workshop. You're going to definitely get very, very good information in that one. So and I think Holly agrees with me. You know, I mean, I just read, you know, four new workshops. Two of them are by new faces, so you know, you're going to get to meet a lot of new people this year if you are a regular attendee of Imaginarium. And of course, if you're coming for the first time, then everybody's going to be new. So that's great. We also have a couple of new panelists, Nick Steverson, who is an author, and then also Kathleen Ashcraft, who is a filmmaker. She's also works in art departments as a location manager and all kinds of things in independent films throughout this region. So got a lot of various experience in different departments, and yeah, definitely is going to have a lot to contribute to some of the indie film panels. But they are now aboard as panelists. And then today was a fun one. When I saw how Holly told me about this guest, I mean, I was like, wow. But Judith A. Yates, author, criminologist, and also game designer and podcaster. And she is an award-winning true crime author and criminologist. And she has been on A&E, Oxygen Channel, and ID, and numerous other national television shows as a guest expert, and also been a speaker, lecturer, and instructor for lots of major organizations across the U.S. for almost 30 years in the area of criminology, including Dr. Henry C. Lee Markle Symposium, Texas Association of Licensed Investigators, the National Homicide Investigators Conference, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons. So, I mean, I don't think I need to tell you, she knows her stuff. And she's also the editor of True Crime Case Files magazine. And as if that's not enough, she's the director of Best True Crime Books, Games, and Video podcast. And they are this year releasing their first game. So she's also into the gaming area as well. So, yeah, it covers quite a bit of the topic areas that we do at Imaginarium. And her writing is both fiction and nonfiction in nature. So, but she is a spotlighted guest this year. And, yeah, Holly, good. Kudos. Because, Holly talked to her first. Holly talked to her first and brought her aboard. So, I mean, she is a great guest.
I'm excited. But, I really am.
Yeah, and I think it'll fit well with our Imaginator. Jeff Mudgett, who you've heard on the show. He was the one, the force behind American Ripper. You know, of course, talking true crime. I mean, he is a descendant of first American serial killer H.H. Holmes. And, he's the one behind that theory that there may be similarities between H.H. Holmes and Jack the Ripper, and controversial topic, but a fun one, and he has a lot of stuff to bring to that argument. But he is also a force of true crime.
What he has to say.
Yeah. So if you're into mystery thriller type writing, or if you're a filmmaker doing these kind of things, and true crime, in a true crime fan, and looking at you, Metalbeck Harrison. But yeah, these are guests that are just absolutely phenomenal, and I think that you definitely don't want to miss them. I mean, they are just going to be superb, and the content is just going to be great. Ollie, that's kudos again, Ollie. That was a pleasant surprise when I got that info to put up on the site. Good job. But
I think we've got such a plethora of guests for the 10th year. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
keeps getting stronger all the time. Well, it's 10th anniversary. Got to have the biggest. But we're gonna have
That's
our
right.
featured guest tonight coming up in just a couple minutes. But first, we have to recognize those that brought you tonight's show. And tonight, of course, we have some familiar names, and I do hope you go out and support both of them and tell them how much you love them and you appreciate their support of the show. But they are Sandy Lender, of course, we call her the Genre Blender, and also Per Bastet Publications. So we'll start off first with the amazing Sandy Lender, and then we'll go over to Per Bastet.
Author Sandy Lender invites you to visit her website at authorsandylender.com to pick out a new favorite story to read this spring. You're sure to find a strong young lady, a clever vampire, a self-assured fairy, or a fabulous dragon to join on a new journey. Start your next adventure at authorsandylender.com and make some new quest friends. Welcome to Sandy's various fantasy worlds, where some days you just want the dragon to win.
Thank you, Sandy, and just a superb writer. Go pick up a couple of her books for sure. And now over to Per Bastet with the great literary triumvirate of Teeley Harris, Marion Allen, and Sarah Marion. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. Over 40 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything. Follow the investigations of Private Eye David Blaze and M.B. Dabney's An Untidy Affair, a historical mystery set during the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in Philadelphia. Or join the psychic private investigator Alan Rodriguez in New Mexico in A Handful of Dirt by Janie Franz as he tries to clear an elderly man wrongfully accused of murder. You can find these titles and more at PerBastetPublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events such as In Conjunction in Indianapolis, Louisville's Imaginarium Convention in July, and Prime Crime in Indianapolis in October. Per Bastet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. So yes, go over to PerBastetPublications.com. And also give them some support. Tell them you appreciate the show. So, all right. So chat room, are you all ready? All right. Everybody ready? All right. We're going to bring aboard our guests. I'm excited tonight. It's been a long time since I've talked to these two individuals. Of course, tonight we're going to shift over into the music side of things. And so this is a band that has over a 20-year career and has released several albums. And tonight we have the honor of bringing to you both the lead singer and a guitarist for the band Spent. So tonight on the Star Chamber Show, for the very first time, I welcome on board the amazing Mike Gonzalez and the total package, Ken Mars. All right, guys, your mic should be on, and hopefully you can hear me.
We can hear you. Hello.
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 Hello. How's it going?
It's going well. Going well. Mike and I are here together, so hopefully you guys hear us on the speaker here well.
I do hear you. And hopefully you've got some good beverages or kicking back, ready to talk some metal. We cover a lot of crazy creative stuff. We talk to everything, from game designers, authors, musicians, and all. But I do get a special feeling when I get to go into some of my wheelhouse. And, of course, that's heavy metal. Everybody knows I love it. And it's always, I think the last heavy metal guest we had aboard was Andy Haught of Zero King, who you guys, I believe, know well. So but Andy was on a little ways back. So it's been a little bit since I've gotten to talk some music. So tonight is going to be awesome. And so, first of all, I mean, I know you guys and all, but I'd like to, for you guys to tell the audience about, you can introduce each of yourselves and talk a little bit about the band and what you guys do. And then we'll dive into it and talk about this awesome event you've got going on very shortly.
Well, you know, you were right, and you were a part of our beginning. Our first show was at Rockhaven. So we started 20 years ago. We're definitely a metal band. We try to give what we call a good live experience to our audience, and we always kind of took pride in that and give it an energetic show and try to bring some intensity to what we do. And, you know, we've been really fortunate. We've been able to play out for a long time, play in front of some national acts and play in other towns outside of Lexington, yep, obviously. And so we've been very fortunate, and you know, that you know, we got to bring the metal thunder to Lexington in the old days.
And all around. Yeah, other venues, yeah, in the region too. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. And it's yeah, and I do go back with you guys to the early days, but certainly I mean, you guys have you know, been together for a while. You've got a lot of chemistry, put out some really good albums, which I have here at the house in my CD collection. And yeah, and it's yeah, it's been cool to hear that the band is having a reunion. And as far as that goes, you know, a huge show in one of Lexington's major clubs here at Manchester Music Hall on April the 22nd. I got a little ahead of myself there. April the 22nd. You guys are headlining a show there, and you guys have a number of support acts too. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about what's going down there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so April 22nd at Manchester Music Hall. Doors open at 6:30. Music should start probably around 7-ish or so. We have several different acts. We have Brett and Donnie to probably start off the night. Then after that, we'll do Taylor Road. Then we'll have Hide the Riot, All Saints Fade, and then we will take the stage. So it should be a really good night of music. All these acts do perform. You know, when we were trying to put this bill together, we thought about so a couple things. First off, you know, it's been several years since we've actually played out live, so we had to kind of take a little bit of a, hey, we don't even know really what the pulse of the scene is nowadays, right? But you know, we were able to find some bands that we had seen that put on a show, because you know, as Ken mentioned, that was always something very important to us, is just to be able to put on a true show. You know, you're coming spending, if it's $5, $10, $15, $20, $35, whatever it might be, you know, we want you to feel like you've experienced something, right? That's always been our goal. So we wanted to find similar artists in the sense of, hey, these guys put on a show. It's not just three dudes or four dudes standing on stage playing their instruments. You know, you're coming out to have a good time, and every one of these bands is going to deliver in that regard. They're going to put out a very good show.
And they're all the bands are, some are heavier than others and some are not, but there's an eclectic flavor to it. So it's not a monotonous night musically either. And I think that was important to us as well.
That's what I was going to ask you, is what types of music, you know, do you have a little bit of something for everyone, or, you know, or it's
hard rock
all heavy metal or what?
You know, like Brett and Donnie are more of an acoustic act. Well, they are an acoustic act, and
yeah,
they kind of change in their flavor, almost folky sound, to even kind of a mix of R&B and things.
Right.
And that's kind of a departure of normally what you would see at, like, a rock show. And where Taylor Road's more of, like, at least their original stuff is very reminiscent of, like, early 90s, like Skid Row, things like that. For a young band, it's kind of neat to see that a little bit of a glam metal kind of sound kind of coming back.
Nice.
Got a little bit of a funky hard rock sound to it.
Yeah, almost a little punk.
Yeah.
There's almost like a punk attitude, I would say, to the Hide the Riot. And then All Saints is a little bit more aggressive.
Southern metal.
Yeah, that's probably a good...
Some aggressive southern metal.
Put on a great show that they put on, an absolutely fantastic show.
Yeah, and then, and of course, our music is, it's hard to describe it, but it's always been kind of like, we're not the heaviest or the fastest band, but we try to have our music that has a range of emotion. So our stuff usually may kind of be a slow boil a little bit until there's an emotional outpouring or whatever. So it's going to be a nice mix.
Yeah.
Definitely not a one-trick pony of each band kind of sounds the same and ooh, yeah.
Yeah, and then
right.
The other thing that makes this a little bit different, too, is we do have Tim Mars kind of emceeing the night. So comedian from, I lived out quite some time, right?
20 years.
Yeah, almost 20 years. Did that circuit for a while, back in town now. So he's going to kind of MC the night. He'll probably have some risque jokes in there because, it's a Mars. So.
Yes, I expect it. That'd be awesome.
And you guys will probably get to it, but the nature of the show was that this is obviously this is a charity event. But in its core, it's a rock show. But we wanted to have a little more fun, like the acoustic act, having an MC that's a comedian. We're going to have some silent auction items and things like that. But make it just a little different than what people are used to around here. Because I think usually you go to a rock show, it's the same thing. You see the act play for 30 minutes, an opening act couple, and then the main act comes out, and it's pretty straightforward. We want to kind of almost make it like a concert, but a little bit of a, like a gala event.
Yeah, an event.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly a celebration. And, as far as acoustic acts, one of my latest purchases was Wage War's new Strip CD. When they took all their stuff unplugged, or a lot of good tracks unplugged. And so, never underestimate the acoustic side of things. It can be quite potent. And of course, some of my favorite albums are Alice in Chains acoustic releases. So it sounds fantastic, man. And you can never go wrong with an early Skid Row kind of sound. That's a one of a kind. Slave to the Grind. Still one of my favorite all-time albums. I love that album. And it sounds like you have – and then some southern metal. Sweet, man. So, it's going to be a good mix. And so, if you're into heavy music, it sounds perfect. But it's going to be a celebration of and we're going to get into the cause in a minute. But this is a celebration of you guys. A lot of people really have wanted to see you come back together. It's something that – I know I've talked to you with Chad Wilfong before about, and Nathan Day, our dear friend Nathan. A lot of people have wanted to see Spent come back together. And so what sort of, after this time, got the spark going to do to go ahead and do a reunion? How did it come about?
It's something that we've been playing with the idea probably for 5-6 years about, hey, when's the right time, if there is a right time. For me personally, there was always still something just kind of brewing down in the basement, right? There was still just an itch that needed to be scratched. So we talked about it. There's a few different incarnations where we tried to get the band back together, so to say, and, just something didn't work for whatever reason. Then we got the news with Ken, and I'll let Ken kind of talk about that whole experience and what that, what that brought about. But that was a true catalyst.
That and COVID.
in all of this. So actually the COVID, the COVID is what it is,
Yeah.
But what happened with Ken, I'll let him talk about that. But once all that kind of transpired, then that would just kind of really lit the fire under us to, hey, it's time. We need to get this thing going.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, and then if you guys don't mind, you know.
Yeah, talk to us about, yeah, as much as you want to share. I don't want to put you on the spot, Ken.
No,
but, yeah, definitely, definitely if you, because it does tie into the nature of what the benefit's for. And Holly, actually, I don't know if you two know, because we haven't gotten to hang out with you guys yet in person, but Holly has had over a 20-year career as a nurse. And so she's, yeah, she's very medically, you know, experienced and stuff. And, you know, my father was a cancer researcher. So, you know, so it comes to this, I mean, it's something that, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, we care a lot about.
Well,
and so,
it definitely hit home for both of us. He lost his, Steve lost his mother to cancer. I lost my father back in August to a reoccurring colon cancer. I lost my brother when he was the age of 43. To three types of cancer. He had lymphoma, leukemia, and lung. So, I mean, it hit home for both of us. So, I mean, I really would like to hear about this, and we really, really want to help you promote it.
And most importantly, it's a good a victory story. So that's the best part of this. So, yes, Ken, take us through however much you're comfortable with.
Sure. No, so it's that, you know, like you use the word celebration, and that's what, you know, Gonzo and I have in way we even talked about it to the venue and whatnot. This is not only a celebration of our 20-year anniversary, but for, you know, in 2018, I'd had some lab work done, and just something wasn't right. My blood platelets were low, and really low, and kind of surprisingly so. So, you know, you go through that course of getting recommended to go over to University of Kentucky's Markey Cancer Center, which has a hematology department there. And through the investigative process of why my blood platelets were low, you know, after MRIs and things like that, it was found that I was diagnosed with a rare form of liver cancer called cholangiocarcinoma. And basically, cholangiocarcinoma affects the bile ducts in the liver. And ironically, you know, I told my wife years before, I said, you know, my dad's father died of pancreatic cancer. His older sister died of pancreatic cancer. And his younger brother died of cholangiocarcinoma. I said, it wouldn't shock me. I wind up getting one of those. It just seems hereditary. And there's a lot of genetic studies going on anyway. And that's a whole other, you know, conversation. But, and sure enough, I had what my uncle had. Cholangiocarcinoma is typically a terminal diagnosis. Once it's in the liver, it usually spreads. Fortunately, because I was a good boy and went to the doctor the way I should have, I got that blood work done, caught early. So long story short, I went to University of Kentucky. And then went into MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and the world's expert on cholangio is based out of there. And he looked at my labs, and he said, come back in another day, and I think I don't want to stew over your stuff. And later said, you know, I think, you know, your cancer seems to be not spreading quickly. And if you react well to chemo and this and that, you would qualify for an experimental transplant. And typically, liver transplants are given to liver cancer patients because the risk of it spreading is usually too strong, and it's not a worthy procedure because you're wasting a liver that could have gone to someone else that would have probably lived longer. But there's about 8 or 9 hospitals across the country that does it, and fortunately, MD Anderson and Houston Methodist Hospital does it. Long story short, day before Thanksgiving in 2020, I got the call at 9-something in the evening and was on a medic flight by 1 a.m., and I was in Houston, Texas in the morning. And had a, you know, instead of turkey for Thanksgiving, I had a liver. So, you know, definitely a celebration. I didn't think we were going to make this show. I didn't think I was going to make this show. And then to survive this experience, you know, like Gonzo said, we already had that fire there, but now there was like, well, now there's no reason not to do this. And it's why we wanted to do the show and make it a charity event, a fundraiser for some version of a cancer foundation or something to benefit cancer research or whatnot. And we've decided I'm the American Cancer Society's Hope Lodge. I had worked for them part-time when I was getting back into working again, and they house cancer patients that live 45 miles outside of treatment centers for free for as long as they need to. And, knowing the strain, the financial strain of traveling, which we had to do back and forth to Texas and then live there for 2 months when I was recovering, to have something like a Hope Lodge in Lexington, Kentucky is a whatever your faith is, it's a blessing because it's such a great resource for cancer patients. So we just couldn't think of a better organization to generate donations from this event.
That's amazing. And you really did. I mean, this is very personal for you, just not just in terms of it being a cancer benefit, but also the organization. I didn't realize that you actually had been involved with them too, because I was looking into them. They seem amazing. I mean, when I was looking into them before the show, and I thought it was great you picked a locally based organization too for this.
Yeah.
But I did not realize that you also had worked with them. So, that's awesome.
That's a really, really humbling experience, because I think sometimes we forget, and not to go on a tangent here, but we forget about what's important in life. And I'd obviously been through my experience of being thankful for my surviving this and having family and friends be there for me. But when I was at the Hope Lodge during their Thanksgiving, and this couple donated food, there was only a handful of people there that were actually there for the Thanksgiving day. But people weren't complaining about their illness and woe is me. They were talking about their children and enjoying each other's company. So even through these bad, horrible things that we go through, we can find positives. And I definitely wanted my experience to turn into something positive. So that was just a reminder as a part of a motivation for doing this charity concert, was do something for the better, because you have this chance to do it. So, it's been a very humbling event thing for me, but I'm glad I've gone through it and I'm for the better now.
I'm glad you're doing that kind of work, because I can't imagine that it's anything but a big uplift for somebody going through their battle to meet somebody like you that came out the other end of a rare. Of not just a known form of cancer, a well-known one, but a rare form, and beat it.
Yeah.
That's got to be a good thing for folks to meet you and hear about that. So that's awesome, man. And it's certainly, glad you're rocking and rolling again, back at full steam ahead. And imagine, for music side, because, expressing through music, I wonder if this has got some juice is going for songwriting. Is there any of that going on, Mike and Ken, in the Spent camp right now? Is there, because I know inquiring minds want to know. You guys doing any playing around on some new stuff?
So there is a little bit of playing around on some new stuff. we're taking it little by little. I think that, we're tackling this event first and foremost, right? So we're trying to get this taken care of. I don't think it's going to be a one and done sort of deal for us, right? I think that what it's going to look like, I don't know anyone really knows yet what it's going to look like going forward. I would venture to guess that, that it's not going to be, this will not be the end of it.
Awesome.
We are very much inspired to write new music. We want to write some new stuff. Will it be probably at the same level that we were 10 years ago, where we were gigging we would take any kind of gig and we would go anywhere and play anywhere and, on a monthly basis, sometimes, two, 3 times a month, whatever. It's not probably going to ever get to that, but will it be something that we do on a quarterly basis? In that time, write new music.
Yeah.
The climate of the music industry has changed quite a bit, right? People put out EPs now left and right, and full length albums necessarily. You don't that's kind of what everyone's doing now, right? So, see, I can see that happening. You know, so probably a handful of EPs, maybe. You know, let's again, we'll get past this. We've got a couple of songs that we're working on.
We actually booked studio time, but when the event got booked, we realized just really realistically preparing for that, and then the amount of time.
Sure,
because you know this is.
Yeah.
We've been very, very lucky to have a lot of sponsors help us with this. So coordinating the sponsorship things took more time, and we quickly realized we'll record after this event.
Yeah.
When
more
time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to get into the music industry because, boy, I love to vent about the life of indie artists and authors and musicians these days.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other topic. Getting back on stage again, and I was looking at your new band photo, which I pulled the pictures of you two from for our graphic, and it looked to me like you have a new member. I saw the founding members, of course, but yes, you it looked like you have somebody new in the band. So do you want to give a rundown of the full lineup? Because I know Chad Wilfong wants to definitely get his name said at least 10 times on the air tonight. So yeah, we'll definitely give him a little spotlight. But as far as the band and your new and give some background on the new fella.
So we'll just run down. You know, obviously we still got Ken on lead. I guess lead guitar.
Mm-hmm.
We have Brian Stinnett, who was of our career.
Right.
Big for us really is bringing Chad back into the fold. It's just amazing. Like there's just some songs that, man, nobody in the, 5-6 years since he left, has been able to play, and it just seeing him behind the kit just feels right.
Yeah.
There's just a certain attitude and aggression that Chad has playing drums that, I love some of the drummers we've had in the past, since him, they served to move us forward, and I don't think we would not be here without those guys. But having Chad back in the fold is fantastic. And with that, we did lose Phelps within this incarnation. We did ask him to come back, and wasn't going to. He's moved to Louisville, and just the cards just didn't quite play out. So with that, we do have Dave taking over bass duties for us, otherwise known as Nugget. We've known David for a long time. So he used to be in a band called Inner Sin that we played with a lot in the early days. And he's also in Hide the Riot, who's on the bill as well now, too. That's a band that he fronts and kind of his baby. But it's great to have David in there because we knew him on a personal level from the get-go. So it was easy for him to gel with us.
Chemistry.
Yeah, chemistry is there immediately. And he knows what we're about. He knows the attitude that we like to have on stage. He's got that. And then some. And he's a damn good bass player as well.
Yeah.
So what was it like discussing what songs to do for this particular show and what order to put them in? That had to be kind of fun after all these years to come back and decide on a set list. So you haven't done that a little bit.
It was fun because we went into this event knowing that it's over at Manchester and a certain level of performance that we wanted out of it. Not to say that if we played somewhere smaller, some of these places are wonderful, like Al's or Green Lantern. I mean, they're really fun places to play. But with that stage and the venue and just the kind of the attention we were trying to give, we were trying to come up with stuff that we knew everybody would want to hear, put it in an order that flows well, give a good stage show. It's really been, even when we were playing smaller places, we never tried to shortchange that.
We
put a lot of thought process to our set list and how we did things, how we came out on stage, how we ended the show. So it's been fun. There's some most of the usual suspects for Spence are going to be there.
Yep.
And, you know, we tried
That's
to
cool.
throw in some things. First album, American Pastime, that we thought people
mm-hmm.
like and know, and then
mm-hmm.
some of the stuff that we've done really well with on the second EP, and even the
yeah.
something we had written after the Scars album, we had written a song that's going to be on there. So we got a couple little surprises as well.
Yep.
If you were going to be there, I probably would have thrown out the would have done the Trooper for you, but you know.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah, you blame Holly for this one. She booked me up in Detroit. Yeah, at an event, and then I saw
Fear
the date
dark.
You guys had, and I was like, "Oh, come on!" I was like, "Give me a
what
break."
Was before we
but,
knew.
Yeah, I guess, but yeah, technically, yeah, this is before you knew, but so I'll give
yeah.
you a little pass on that, but yeah, but I mean, the being a fan of a band, it's interesting because you have certain fans that, you know, they always want to hear, okay, I'll just, for lack of a better comparison, I'll use Kiss as an example because a lot of people know Kiss and I'm a huge Kiss fan. Everybody wants to, you know, there's a certain large group of fans that always expect to hear Detroit Rock City, Rock and Roll All Night and everything over and over and over again. Then you got the guys like me, you know, that want to hear them pull some weird track off The Elder or Creatures of the Night. You know, some deep tracks, some obscure something from here or there that
yeah.
they, you know, typically don't play. So you got this kind of like tug, but back and forth. But I think, you know, for the band, it is kind of fun to bring, you know, something crazy into the set or something obscure, you know, they don't usually play. So I found it interesting when you said you got a few surprises and you're going to also really have a spectrum from across all the albums. So that sounds like a set that will satisfy the fanatics. And then also the general fans.
Yeah, we're
that's the hope, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
We just want, you know, it's playing on stage is fun, and you know, like Gonzo said earlier, you know, people pay money to be entertained.
Yeah,
and you hope that you do that. You know,
yeah.
We just want to give
yeah.
people their money's worth. We enjoy
Absolutely.
Doing it, so that's what's important. So we just can't wait to get up there. Actually, I think.
Yeah.
We're at that point.
Well, as far as
we're ready.
Let's go.
Well, as far as the future, I mean, you can borrow a page right out of the Kiss playbook. Just declare a never-ending farewell tour and just add random dates as you go and extend it indefinitely.
Retire thinking of coming back.
Yeah, you never have to actually conclude a farewell tour, evidently. You can kind of perpetually keep it going. So, that's a good model to borrow off of. But, yeah, I figured, I mean, you're mentioning the music business, and, of course, we talk about the several sectors of indie film and, you know, the book world and everything else. I mean, but it is just, you know, in a lot of ways, it's rougher than ever now than even it was like back in, you know, 2015, for instance. I mean, even in just, you know, 8 some years, I mean, it's even changed to, you know, and again, and so, you know, yeah, absolutely. You don't have gatekeepers to do your thing, but to actually make it work is, I think, harder than ever now. And so, yeah, I do understand, you know, on that because, it's tough. Yeah, when people it's... Yeah.
You can appreciate it because writers and things. But, you know, I look at these bands and acts coming out, and, you know, I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, it's you know, people mm-hmm. think that, like, these guys, these rock stars are greedy, money-grubbing musicians. And maybe in the old days they were, you know, swimming champagne pools or something. But, man, I don't know how they're going to make living from it. When you look at the venue prices and the cost of everything. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's the world's just changed so dramatically. And, you know, as a fan of being a musician, but just being a fan, you don't see your favorite acts go away because they just can't afford to do it anymore.
Yeah, right. You don't make money off the sale of the music. You know, I still buy vinyl, love it, and you were actually in a vinyl golden age. That's great, but it doesn't sell the volume anymore that obviously did way back. And but yeah, I mean, it's not the music that you make them. I mean, you have to make it off like merchandise now, and you know, when you play live, and so and that's fine and good for a known band, But when you're like an unknown band or an up and coming band and nobody knows you yet, I mean, selling merch is not an automatic. I mean, that's pretty rough.
It's hard.
And that's got to be a and you're right. It's as far as like and bands need to be able to make a living doing what they do in order to build that chemistry. Like you read the stories of how Rush developed and how they were basically almost on the ropes after Caressive Steel, and it didn't sell as well as the record label hoped, but they let them go into 2112 and then all bets are off. And, back then, a lot of bands were allowed and supported enough to gel and build come together and build the following and the chemistry and the touring and everything like that. Today, I mean, you really can't get in that kind of situation because it's not economically possible. So, it's tough.
The social media world changed the music business. I mean, like, you had artists like the Billie Eilishes of the world that changed the game.
Right.
She didn't need a...
Oh, yeah.
She was selling millions of, downloads of her song before she was ever really signed on a major act, So the world just changed, too, in how you present your art. And how you get into people's hands and say you're not going to make money on those downloads. You're going to make money on, say, merchandise if you get on a tour.
It's true.
Wow.
And there's so much pay to play. Like when I look at the concert scene today and the festivals, it's like all these bands have to pay for slots to get off the show. And then the bands that are booking at various venues and clubs, it's like the old California model from way back when is now the norm where, it's all based on, the band has to get out there and sell their own, tickets, as opposed to, the old days where, you got, the door or, you got the, small guarantee or something. I mean, even that's been a big shift, I imagine.
Yeah, I can't imagine. We've seen a little snapshot of that years ago when we were looking into trying to bring some bands here, national acts, and I don't know if people can do that anymore, like command $15,000 to play at a medium-sized venue or something. It's just not realistic anymore.
Yeah. And on the plus side, though, I mean, there are some good things with, as far as like home studio gear and recording software and things like that, which do allow you to demo and trade ideas and songwrite in ways that, really weren't quite as possible, say, 20 years ago. Those aren't so bad. I mean, those are pretty good. I mean, especially during COVID, obviously, is about the only thing you could do.
we had a couple, kind of writing sessions and things like that. The technology has brought some opportunities, like you say, the digital, templates and some of these things. But it's funny,
and I think we're probably old school in the sense that we like to be in a room together and try to figure it out.
Yes.
I agree.
That's the best.
Playing together and just working
off each other.
Yeah, working through an idea and getting something that feels
bouncing
right.
Bouncing the idea.
Yeah, we're if we were touring, it'd be one thing. If there's so many great digital profilers now that you can use for your amps, and you just plug right into the PA system, you have to be very discerning to be able to tell that the real amp and this and that. But all the guys in our group, we all have two amp heads, and we just like them better. Our other guitarist Brian had his Line 6 Helix, and he was like, I think I'm just going to stick with the EVH because it sounds better. I think that old school mentality is still something to be said about it.
No, you can't beat it. I mean, as far as recording, getting some of the old analog sounds. I mean, you just can't beat it. But speaking of gear, what kind of axes are you slinging these days, Ken? And what is your amp setup these days? I know musicians love talking gear. And then Mike, you could tell us your current mic preference.
On the guitar end, I've been for years playing Hamer double cutaways, And when I stopped playing, I unfortunately had to sell some gear and stuff like this. I was, you know, kind of doing stuff. And so I didn't have my hammer. So when I went back into playing, I started playing Schecter guitars.
Nice.
And I know so many people are big guitar people and this and that, but I just like ESP branded stuff. The Japanese and Korean made guitars are outstanding. They're very playable. They've got features that Gibson and some of these bigger guys won't give you for the money. And absolutely love it. So I've got a couple Schecters, and I wanted to get a really, you know, kind of treat myself to a real tube head that I didn't really even have in the old days, and switched to a Rivera knucklehead gray. And if you're a metal fan, you've heard that on things like All Hope Is Gone from Slipknot, you know, and Subliminal Verses.
Mm-hmm.
Great sounding. Uh-huh. It's a heavy amp, but it still has an articulated sound to it. So love it. And then Rivera he was an amp builder for Fender for years. So the clean on this high-gain amp sounds like a blues amp on the clean channel. I love it.
Ooh.
So, that's what I
nice.
Play to and haven't looked back. Gonzo, you're
I love any mic that's plugged into the PA and I'm pretty easy to get in that regard.
You do have a Shure.
I have a Shure, but I mean, it's, you know,
Shure Beta.
Yeah, it's nice that to sing into, but you know, honestly, it's
right.
Just give me something to yell and sing into and
yell and sing.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not keep you on the spot here, because I mean, you have some great influences like LeJohn from Seven Dust and a lot of great frontmen, and you know, you not only have a great voice, but you also you know, bring a presence to a live show, and you put on a show. I mean, you're a front man as well as a vocalist, and that's something that can't be underestimated. Especially when it comes to metal. I mean, people are expecting some energy on stage. And let's see, that's give you some credit there on that too. I mean, yeah, you're a showman.
When we first started, you know, the band, when we were just, I think we at that time maybe wrote, you know, we knew, like, first song we ever learned how to play together was Outshine by Soundgarden. That was the first song we ever played together as a band. I'm never going to sing like Chris Cornell, but I can guarantee you the one thing I can do is I'll entertain people. Put me on a stage and I will entertain and I will give energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really something. I'm old now, man, but I still pride myself on being able to do that. It's been some time, right? It's been about a decade since or so. I mean, maybe not quite that, but it's been a while since we've actually been up on stage, and but it's going to be a lot of fun, and I guarantee that, you know, the energy is still going to be there. No, there's no doubt about it. You know, we did a little warm-up gig in December, little pizzeria places, just, you know, I think we played 5 songs. We just want to do something to kind of cut our teeth, you know, especially with Nugget, like, okay, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And I mean, the second we plugged in, first note was hit, and, like, it just turned on. It felt right and it was good, and it just...
Gonzo got everybody to the front. I mean, it was within, you know, 10 seconds we had, which actually surprisingly had about 50 people show up out, and we didn't even advertise it. And he was like, all right, get to the front. Everybody just moved right up to the front, and it was like game on.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Riding a bike.
Yeah, that's awesome. And
it was where, you know, all the songs we played before, but there was this moment where you're on stage and it didn't feel like it had been years.
No.
Like, I was just, like, kind of in automatic pilot again. Okay. Yeah, this is still fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we didn't,
absolutely.
We didn't incite a riot or anything, but it was still a good time.
Well, I think the thing is when you come back at it like now, and you're far from old. I will say that. I mean, in the rock world, I mean, you got bands with members that are decades older than you that are still full throttle and playing metal major metal festivals who are 20-30 years older than you guys. And so you're not old by any means. But you guys look great. I mean, that picture, man, you guys look like you're fit and ready to tear it up. But it's definitely, you come back to the perspective where you do it for, I think you do it a little more for the enjoyment of it this time rather than that, that kind of weird kind of pressure like, oh, I've got to make it. And that's something that I think that comes with time and you settle down a little bit on that where you get less frantic about some of the superficial things and you get more in tune with the reason you did it in the first place. And so I think that, you coming back to it now, I think maybe that's something that'll, kind of be something to, provide a comfort zone where, you kind of can connect with that more than, feeling like you have
fun.
Relax, have fun rather than feeling like you have to do every gig every weekend and take, the crappiest slot. And, it allows you to pick and choose a little more. Yeah.
And no doubt, especially given, the ability to refocus from all the stuff that happened with Ken, right? Like, it's just like, okay, there's like pure joy in this, right? This should be, and our music is what our music is. It's heavy, it's aggressive, but there's a lot of joy in it as well. I've always tried to be a very positive, I've tried to have positive messages in all of our songs, even though you may not hear that. It may not seem like it's positive, it's positivity, but it really is about overcoming and just continuing the fight. So it's just having all of that, it's just easier for, I think, for us to refocus on that.
Sure.
In musicians love creating music and playing it. But I think, we're that we like to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It's great, nice to sit at home and play, but it's a lot more fun up on stage, there's a lot of joy in that, be able to do
that. I can attest to that, having been around you guys a lot during your first wave. You guys always loved playing live, and that was clear all the time.
Yeah.
And you guys wanted to be on stage like constantly. I think you guys would have played like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on if you could have gotten away with it. at the clubs we were involved in. So you guys had that kind of fire, but definitely.
Yeah, on the second iteration when Brian was involved, when he came in on board. There was a couple nights where we had played something like at A1A, and someone's like, "Hey, can you play a show in Frankfurt?" So we drive over right after at A1A or something. Like, there's like chicken wire on the stage or something. I was like, "All right."
Oh, classic!
Like, it was like literally the Blues Brothers.
We did an MF Hulu show where we were supposed to play with somebody else. That band didn't show up, and they're like, "You guys play again?" They're like, "All right."
Sure.
Okay. So,
you guys are always one of the good guys in the scene. You guys never had the kind of contentiousness with other bands. You guys were always gracious. You guys didn't care, sometimes opening a show or whatever. I mean, the attitude you guys always had was fantastic. I remember that clearly. And that's why you guys were always a band that, I personally could root for. And because believe me, I dealt with all types. And, guys were on the top tier of the good guys list. So that's good. That's oh, man, the memories are flooding back now. I can even see Spent on stage in my head now.
I got a question. What is the craziest show you ever played? What was your craziest experience that you can remember? Burns of memory in your
there
brain.
There are many, I bet.
No, this is the easiest. This is the easiest question to answer. It is so fitting for this conversation because it was a Steve Zimmer.
Oh, geez. Oh, God help me.
Music conference at we were at the Hyatt.
I knew it.
It was, without a shadow of a doubt, the most stereotypical rock and roll experience. Like for
the whole weekend.
The whole weekend was just unbelievable.
We got everybody drunk.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, so the first night it was us and the boys from Lucid at the bar there at the Hyatt, buying shots for
everybody.
Yeah, I think the Lucid boys and I were going back and forth. Like we'd buy a round for everyone, then they would buy a round. At some point, we lost Chad Wilfong. He just disappeared. Ken finds him out in the middle over outside of Rupp Arena, bleeding and just literally speaking gibberish, not having any idea.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yep. I remember. Yep.
Wow. So then we fast forward to the next day. We're there bright and early.
Well, not all of us were there bright and
not
early.
Not all of us.
Chad.
Booth at the conference. And then later that night, we were going to play. Chad, we're supposed to go on maybe 10. He shows up at 9 because he'd been sick all day. And,
the night had gotten away from the itinerary and from the acts. I think at some point, I'm sure there was something going on that Steve was having to take care of. And then so acts, you know, all the acts kind of ahead of us took time into their own hands. And they just kept on pushing their own times longer and longer and longer. They're set longer and longer and longer. So I think we were supposed to go on, like you said, like maybe around 10. There's a pretty hard curfew at the venue for
noise.
Yeah, noise. I'm sure probably 11 o'clock, right? And so we hit the stage at like 10:50, you know. And at that time, we have a packed room, in front of us. Everyone, you know, everyone's sticking around to hear us play. We come on, we sit and
do
one or two songs. We've got girls coming up on the stage. Dancing on the stage,
really
just like,
fun.
just crazy vibe. And the sound
rock and roll.
The sound guy comes up and tells us, "Hey, we got to cut you off." And I'm like, "There's no way you're cutting me off."
That was like Neil McGinley, I think, was sound man at night. Yeah, I remember that.
I think it was James. It was somebody else. I think it was someone.
Neil McGinley. Neil McGinley, I think, was running sound.
So he pops in for one more song, and then he comes back up and he's like, "Hey, we got to cut you off." And Ken's like, "I'm going to throw you under the bus right here." Ken's like, "Hey, man, let's turn it off." And I looked at Chad, and Chad and I, can I cuss on this podcast? So Chad and I were like, "There's no effing way we're turning off right now. We have a crowd chanting our name. And there's no way we're turning off." So I tell him, I said, "Plug back in." So he walks to the back of the board. He plugs us in, and I see him wipe his hands up in the air, like, "I'm plugging you in. Whatever happens from here on is no longer my responsibility." And he walks. We play enough songs, and then we hear that the police have arrived to the front of the venue
with paddy wagon.
Yeah, with the paddy wagon.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Famous.
So then our boys are like, "Hey, man. Just get out of here. We'll take care of all the equipment." Yeah, we had a room up in the hotel. And so where this guy from the Hyatt just shows up, and he's like, "Follow me." So the four of us run off the stage.
The freight elevator.
Yeah, we take the freight elevators up to the hotel room and get away scot-free, right?
Our friends are like, "We'll get your gear. Don't worry about your crap." And they're like clearing out the people. And so it's like we've been road-dogging in our car. And there was chatter. They called the riot at the Hyatt riot.
Yep.
Yeah,
two
the Hyatt riot.
Finding it, trying to get good gigs. We get a call from the Dave Angstrom and those guys, and they're like, "Hey, we need you to open the 4-hour lash for Superfuzz."
Oh,
and that was
awesome.
Kind of
Without a doubt.
And that was an iconic year. I mean, the Hyatt riot was one of the best stories of all time. And I know Greg Huff and I have talked about that a lot in years since, Greg from Lucid Gray. And, there's a lot of people that remember that.
Why have I never heard this story? Zimmer, why have I never heard this story?
That was the year. That year was wild.
This is epic, man.
It's kind of like we had a mini South by Southwest was the event. It was the MEIC, and it was, you know, we had a lot of shows going on at places around town, and we had a film festival, and we dealt with mainly music and film stuff. It wasn't book involved, you know, at that time, and but it was a lot of fun, and that year was pretty iconic because we had David Carradine as a guest, you know, the David Carradine. And then we had Eddie Kramer, you know, the producer with, you know, Hendrix and Kiss and, you know, worked with all kinds of folks as an engineer, producer. Zeppelin's on his resume. I mean, just him, iconic man. And, yeah, that was a surreal for me meeting him because of his work with Kiss. I mean, it was wild. And my mother actually became buddies with him on the phone because she was handling some of the helping me out, you know, with some of the administrative stuff. And so she would talk to, you know, guests on the phone while we were getting ready for the event and the weeks leading up. And she developed a rapport with him. So she would just like have little chats with Eddie Kramer on the phone. And I was thinking, how weird is this, you know, being a Kiss fan with my mom just having chats with Eddie Kramer. And but he brought up a gallery of his photographs, which was not, he didn't commonly show those, but he brought up a gallery of his photographs to show at our event and had them chipped in specially for that at the Hyatt. And so it was a really special weekend. And but yeah, the Hyatt Riot was cherry on the sundae. That was rock and roll. That was definitely real rock and roll.
Oh, we should probably get off. They're like, cops are coming. And Chad was like, I'm not getting off the epic stage. And then there's this moment and you go, yeah, what am I thinking? Yeah. Yeah, we stay on stage. It could have been a better moment. Even the fans were like literally chanting our name to go back on and play. You know, you just can't get that.
Yeah, how metal is that, though? I mean, few bands in the world ever experience, I mean, something that metal. I mean, that is great. No one could ever take that away from you.
Yeah, and that following year, I can't remember who it was, but it was one of the panelists was in a panel, and somebody asked him a question.
He's a record producer.
Right? Yeah, he was a record producer, and he pointed me out. And he's like, that guy last year, like, he's like, that was a true metal moment. Like, it held over year to year. Like, they remembered that moment. For us, it was a big moment kind of for us. It's a great story. It's a great memory. I'll never forget that weekend, what I can remember
of
it.
Nobody will. It was there. Yeah. That's impossible to forget. that was something else. And somehow we didn't get in trouble. We managed not, and that's the most astounding thing. We managed not to get in trouble at the Hyatt, which is amazing. Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't like nobody did any kind of big damage. There wasn't any vandalizing the property or anything like that. Just people were just loud and yelling. You know, that's about it.
But that night before, Friday night was like Almost Famous, where they're at that hotel and on Sunset, where it's just people just. Mm-hmm. Drinking all night, and just people hanging out. Great was
it was a great vibe,
great camaraderie. All these bands, so I think that helped build for the night following night too, because everybody wanted to hang tight and watch our set, and then it got cut short, and they were like, no. So it was just such a fun experience.
Oh yeah, Carradine ended up playing that piano in the Hyatt lobby and sit there singing, playing piano. I mean, yeah, because he had. He had come with the group, the Soul Dogs. I don't know if you guys knew. He had a band, really kind of eclectic, kind of bluesy, you know, little mix of other things kind of band. Great bunch of people in that group, too. I loved all of them. But, he was there. He actually performed, but he sat there and played piano in the Hyatt. That was awesome. I mean, there was a lot of weird moments I remember from that particular weekend, but. Oh man, guys, if you're on, call back. I think we just lost him, Holly. I think the connection just dropped, so we'll just give him a chance to call back.
Oh no,
yeah,
that was such a good story.
I know, it's such a great story. Yeah, getting me talk about Carradine and all the adventures with him, and you know, and definitely the story, you know, stories with Eddie Kramer. That was fun. And you know, the Hyatt Riot, as it's affectionately called. And, but again,
the
nobody
Hyatt
was, but the,
oh my
the,
God.
Yeah, this is, but you gotta put it in context though. Nobody got beat up or hurt. I mean, it wasn't like a uber violent thing. I mean, people just yelled a lot and were upset that they cut off the band and stuff, but they went overtime and, you know, people, they were getting kind of cleared out by the police that came in, but there wasn't like anything getting thrown around or property damage and anything like that. It wasn't
like a Motley Crue type hotel escapade.
No, not like that. Yeah.
You remember their escapades back in the late 80s, early 90s? They would go to hotel rooms and just trash the shit out of them and throw stuff out the windows and everything, have them big wild parties. And yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. So it wasn't.
No, it wasn't that bad. And I didn't want the band to get the wrong kind of reputation as they're making their comeback. Oh God, we can't book those guys. Not what I wanted to see happen. But hopefully they'll call back in here. Their connection dropped, but hopefully they'll call back in so we can finish up here.
You got them on text, don't you?
I do. I got to watch the board, though, just in case they call back in there.
Okay.
So we'll
let me see if I can call them.
Yeah, see if you got them on Facebook. Let's see.
I got Mike.
Yeah, give Mike a quick message there. Yeah, because that would be a shame if they. Oh, there they go. Here they go. There's the guys.
Okay.
They're back. They called back.
Yeah, I don't know what you heard and didn't hear. Yeah. We called it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was getting ready to send you a Facebook message. I was like,
I'll text the guys.
Tell them to call back in, man. We's in the midst of this epic story.
Yeah. So what I did for you guys while you're off the air was I did cover and explain the fact that, yeah, people weren't injured and it wasn't like really violent or anything. And so, cause I didn't want the wrong word to get out on that. So that now that you're making your reunion, I didn't want you to get blacklisted.
No one was injured that we know of, right?
Yeah.
No one was getting hurt.
No one was getting arrested. They just were using the police to clear out the crowd. That's literally the gist of it. And there's people were not happy. They were yelling, but yeah, that's about it. Oh man, good story. So, but yeah, the MEIC was a lot of fun, and that was always a good time. And of course, you know, playing around the venues around here, and I do hope that. As you guys kind of move forward, definitely hope to see you, doing some periodic shows at least, even if you can't do as crazy of a schedule as before.
It's probably a safe expectation. I think periodic shows, it makes sense.
Yeah, of course you got Will Fong back, so you got trouble because he's mischievous and he's got a wicked sense of humor. So he might somehow talk you guys into like putting your EP out on 8-track tape, so or some kind of crazy Will Fong type idea. So you have to keep an eye on him. he's unpredictable. Oh man, I can't. Yeah, you got your chance too to roast Mr. Day too. He's not on the air with us, so he's defenseless. So you can roast him too.
Now's your time to shine.
That's too easy of a target, right?
Yeah, it is. I admit it is too way too easy.
No, for the record, we love Nathan Day. We love Nathan.
Oh yes,
he's a. He's a great friend.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. He knows. Yeah, he knows. He knows me just a little bit.
A wee bit, right?
just a wee bit. Yeah, you forget. I've had to put up with him since he launched his author path, so I never could get rid of him. He's like the neighborhood cat. You can't get rid of the neighborhood cat no matter what you do. Nathan is that with me. After all the music stuff died down, he started, getting into the book thing. And so he's been with, been around him ever since. So, yeah, it's just like that. Hard to get rid of,
Yep.
And we love him. We wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I missed him.
For your show, and then you're like, what are you doing? Well, I'm going back home. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So we're coming up on about, let's see, about 15 minutes left in the show. So I do want to talk a little bit about, I always love asking these kind of questions of musicians, but I sort of hinted at one of them with you, Mike. But yeah, I'd like to talk about your personal influences as musicians, each of you individually, to get a sense for, you know, kind of some of the ones that inspire you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you already touched one for me for sure. You know, the Seven Dust, LeJean, you know, but all-time favorite, my like top two all-time favorite artists, you know, Prince is one of them, and John Cougar, Mellencamp is the other one. I can just listen to those guys for 4 days. Probably a little bit unexpected, you know, given what we play, but those, you know, the only thing I really, I mean, just, you know, being brutally honest, just not a big country guy, but other than that, I listen to everything. There's, you know, I listen to Mark Anthony and that kind of stuff a lot at home. I just really love music. Just really can't get out of country stuff, but other than that, yeah, it's you know, right nowadays I love Killswitch Engage, Nonpoint. Used to love 36 Pages, deep end a little bit, but that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for me,
I just want to say one thing real quick though. It's your fault, Mike, but this is true. Whenever I love Seven Dust, you know, I've definitely got their discography, listen to them often. But I do think of you when I think, you know, Seven Dust. You're one of the, you know how you line people with bands sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah, I do align you with Seven Dust. Yeah, that's just from being around you over the years back then. But it's cool. And Holly incidentally grew up near where John Cougar Mellencamp was. As far as his hometown,
well,
in Seymour, Indiana.
I was in his city. I was actually in Seymour all weekend. My uncle actually, John Cougar was a child growing up next door to my uncle. So my uncle knew his parents and everything. And he says, damn, I wish I'd have known he was going to be famous one day. You know?
Small world.
Lives in Seymour, and you see him around once in a while, but he still lives there. Yeah, it's incredible.
And then, folks, real quick, if you like Killswitch Engage, which I happen to love too, also check out Light the Torch, Howard Jones's current band. Love that band.
Yep.
That band is fantastic, formerly Devil You Know. All right, Ken, your turn now. Tell us some guitar players.
My grandfather was a pianist, a church pianist, and my dad was a classical fan. So my first birthday gift that was music, I was a little kid, was Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, Berlin Philharmonic. I grew up loving classical. I was a singer, so I loved, I really love like good choral music and whatnot. But it's funny, when I was in junior high, I got, for my birthday, my mom bought me Metallica Master of Puppets.
Nice.
Yes.
And that opened chord from Battery on that acoustic guitar, and then the hear album was, to me, it was like, I'd like some of the stuff on the radio, like Guns N' Roses, and I really love that Appetite for Destruction stuff, but it like changed my life. Like, I just heard that guitar sound, and you know, metal never, not all the bands were really well recorded. There were great bands, but the recording quality wasn't there, and they somehow figured out the algorithm to do it right with the guy in Denmark. And to me, that was just, it changed me forever. I always kind of wanted to play guitar like James Hetfield on the rhythm end. And, you know, and I've gotten a lot of same bands I like Killswitch and Seven Dust. Love watching that. They're just so much fun to see live and whatnot. I've really, as of late, really gotten into Mastodon, just because they're a heavy band, but they use more vintage amps and things, so they're a little more textured than the average cookie that's coming out right now. But Gonzo, one of the best, if not the best performer I ever saw live was Prince. And I just think absolute respect for great performers. And a good pop's good pop. It doesn't matter. You know, it's a good musicianship. It's good songwriting. It's good songwriting. To me.
Phenomenal. I'm surprised Holly's been quiet because you both mentioned one of Holly's favorites of all time, Prince, and that's the first vinyl she ever owned was Prince's 1984, mm-hmm. The 84 album, Purple Rain. Holly definitely loves, and she just dropped, so she'll call back in a second. Phone connection problems tonight.
I do have to add one to my list because, you know, Ken talked about the album that kind of changed his life. For me, the album, and it's really just this one album, so I don't normally list them, but for me, what changed my love of music from your regular stuff to the heavy was Ministry, The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste. I remember listening that first song the first time, and it was, I fell in love, and I was listening with my brothers, and they were like, what is this shit? and I just was like, this is beautiful is what it is. And the two of them were like, next song, next song, next song. And they could totally discard the album. And I was absolutely in love from the first second. And it's just like, that's what started my love for heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually met them just last year for the first time. And that was pretty cool to be able to be in front of them. And I was able to tell them like what they meant to me in my life was, totally revolutionized music for me.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is awesome. I did not know that story. Actually, as long as I've known you, I did not know that story. That's cool. So learn something new tonight. That's fantastic. And we got Holly's back. Holly, your mic's back
on. I'm back.
Yeah, you got kicked.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It just dropped my call.
Yeah, finicky tonight.
Right in the middle of talking about Prince, and then I was about to die. He was talking Metallica, Master of Puppets, which is like my all-time favorite song and album, I love Metallica. So I'm so excited. So I was like,
So it's a safe bet that during Stranger Things that Ken was like Holly and myself and pumping his fist in the air during the famous Eddie Munson scene.
I jumped off the couch. I found out a heart attack. My oldest son is like, mother, wait till you see this scene. You're going to lose your mind. He said, I'm not going to tell you what song it is, but you're going to lose your mind. And oh, my God. I was like, this is the most epic thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and it's hilarious because that song was always huge for them. But to have this resurgence because of that and these young little bit of it. It was interesting to go into like a Guitar Center and seeing young guys, like teenagers, playing Metallica songs and things. Yeah, that's great. Going away, but to have for them to have that kind of resurgence to a brand new audience, it's just really great to see. You know.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they just bought they've just bought a vinyl plant. Metallica just bought their own record pressing plant. I think it's great. That's
really
awesome.
They make sure first dibs on the supplies. They were smart.
That's what you need to do, guys. You need to buy yourself a pressing plant so you can reissue all your stuff on vinyl with ease.
There you go.
They actually would probably be profitable, too.
Yeah.
People love vinyl so much.
Honestly.
Flirted with learning, and I just didn't have enough time, but I wanted to maybe play Sometimes It Rains, Sometimes It Snows in April. From Prince?
Yes.
I was, I just didn't have enough time. I was working on some kind of fun, different things, and he's way too good of a guitarist for me to rush that. I was like, oh my gosh, these chords are funky.
Everybody forgets, man. It's like nobody thinks of that except for, some of us, Like everybody forgets about what a great guitar player he was. That's something that always kind of slips by.
Yeah. He was phenomenal.
Well, that's something you can work out for a future gig than for one of those down the road shows.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to see something great, watch a YouTube video of, Prince playing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. It's ridiculous how good he is. He just shows up everybody on stage, and he's awesome.
Yeah, she will. Holly will be doing that after the show. I guarantee it because she loves anything Prince.
It's ridiculous.
Because I love that song too. That song always.
Yeah, if it's Prince, Queen, Evanescence, or Bush, those four, you win Holly over a heartbeat. Yeah, and also Rush. Yeah, Holly's also, which is incidentally how we started talking, because I couldn't believe I'd finally found a female Rush fan. I hadn't met too many.
That's why I started picking up the bass guitar when I was a teenager, was because of Geddy Lee.
There weren't too many. Yeah, Holly's a bass player. I don't know if you guys knew that. And I'd gotten her a Fender bass for Christmas a few years back, so hopefully she's going to get back into that just a little bit, but yeah, she played because of Geddy Lee, and I was blown away because I had just simply not encountered that many women that were into Rush. Just the way it is. It's not making a commentary or anything. It's just I just didn't. It's not common. so yeah, when Holly started talking Rush, that got the ball rolling. So I like to say Geddy Lee is our Cupid. So take that with you. But this is cool. So we've got about 3.5 minutes left. So at this point in the show, I want you guys just to give any kind of links and information, not only on the gig, anything important for that online, but also for connecting and following the band or yourselves.
So we do have a website. It's www.spentband.com. So if anybody wants to check it out, they can go on our website. And we're trying to kind of upload it and make it a little more fan-friendly with pictures and videos and things like that. So it's kind of a work in progress, but it's definitely running and looking pretty good. As far as the venue goes, obviously next Saturday, the 22nd, show is going to be at Manchester Music Hall. We would love for people to, if they're interested, to buy tickets in advance. We had a VIP experience. There's only 24 seats. We've sold 22 of 24. It's a $100 ticket, but you're getting catered food from Jay Renders and gift items from
Nice.
Brewery. The people have been so gracious. But the general admission is $35. And it's a little more expensive than the usual local band type show. But why we're doing it is so that we can generate money for the Hope Lodge. We'd love to see a great turnout. It's for a good cause and really not for vain reasons. We're going to have fun regardless and celebrate our anniversary, but it's a reason to get people out to support a really great organization that helps so many people.
Yeah, all proceeds are going to the Hope Lodge, so I mean we're not benefiting out of this in any way, shape, or form. We made special t-shirts for the 20th anniversary, cancer related as well. All that money's going to the Hope Lodge. We've got some raffles that we're going to do, some silent
auction items,
some good stuff in there as well. All that to be generated for the Hope Lodge. Again, just a really, really good cause. You know, we want to have a celebration for the 20 years, for Ken still being around to play this. And, you know, we thought, what better way than to be able to try to give something back?
Yeah. So you can go on Manchester Music Hall's website, and you can link on you'll see the Spend event and have a ticket link and whatnot. But definitely buy in advance so that Ken doesn't lose any more hair stressing about it. But no, it's mm-hmm. a lot to undertake, and we're kind of can't wait to do it.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations! So happy to see this reunion, the celebration, the cause. I mean, everything is great. I mean, I have spent a great evening with you tonight. I mean, it has definitely been a wonderful time, and definitely would love to have you guys back to keep us posted on your future endeavors. So please definitely visit us again. And Holly will take care of the final stuff and any more comments there, and have a great night, guys.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks,
likewise, you guys.
Thank you for having us on, and thanks, Steve, for all you for our band, and
yeah.
And like I said, you had a huge part in it, so thank you.
Most welcome. Holly?
And I want to make sure that people knew the website they can go to. Where can people go to find the link out about buying tickets prior to the door and more information?
So ManchesterMusicHall.com.
Okay.
And it'll be their site. There's some kind of e-ticket sites that are, like, sometimes mysterious, but you'll know it's their site. And there's on the first page, it'll have our event. You'll see Spent, and you can click on the information and buy the ticket from there. If not, on spentband.com, I do have a hyperlink to that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for you guys joining us tonight and sharing these wonderful stories and the great cause that you guys are, supporting here. And I'm so happy and that you've had, your 20-year anniversary, and this is a celebration of life, indeed. So
yeah.
Kudos to that, and good luck with the concert. And we will talk to you guys soon, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Holly. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night. And join us next Wednesday night live, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for another great guest or guests, as I should say, as we have observed tonight. And be creative for the rest of the week until we talk again. Good night.